A popular local news anchor is on the mend from coronavirus. Good morning. We're live from Studio 5. I'm Melissa Ross, and this is First Coast Connect. Thanks for listening. Just ahead, Channel 4's Vic Micolucci on his battle with COVID-19. Join the conversation. Call us up now. It's 549-2937. Then later, a local teacher shares his fears about going back to class in this time of pandemic. But first this hour, here's an update on the pandemic. Across the state, we stand at 451,423 cases of coronavirus and 6,333 deaths. That's another single-day record increase. In our area, the death toll stands at 246. Well, News 4 Jax anchor and reporter Vic Micolucci is a popular presence on local airwaves. Here he is fronting a special report last year on Hurricane Dorian.
Yeah, Tom and Mary, 96 hours is a very long time to be in a disaster zone, the worst that I have personally ever seen and ever covered.
Vic's covered lots of stories. This week, he became the story. He shared some distressing news. Vic Mick, as he's known, is himself sick with corona, and he wants the public to know anyone can come down with this disease, including a young, healthy person like himself. As he slowly recovers, he's on the line right now to share his story about his battle with COVID-19. Vic Micolucci, good to hear your voice. Good morning.
Hey, good morning, Melissa. Thank you so much for having me, and I appreciate everyone listening.
Yeah, great to have you on the show. What are your questions for Vic Micolucci about his experience with coronavirus? Give us a call. It's 549-2937 to join us. Emails to firstcoastconnect@wjct.org, tweets to @MelissaInJax, and our Facebook page is open. Well, you went public with this the other day, letting everybody know you have COVID-19. How you doing? How you feeling right now? How long have you been sick?
It's been about a week and a half. Thank you for asking. I'm doing better, but I'm being really cautiously optimistic about it because every time I feel like I'm over it, I get something back and I get winded and I still have that chest tightness and the shortness of breath. Thankfully, the fever's gone. It's been gone for a couple of days now. The headache's gone. I think that my head is a lot more clear and I'm able to have my thoughts again. The body aches have disappeared, but it was a long and tedious journey. And, you know, if you would have asked me last week in an interview, I probably would have told you much worse things. So, you know, it's part of a process and I'm waiting it out and I'm hoping to get better. And, you know, it's been really a time for me to examine myself and think about others and how we support each other, because I've gotten such amazing support. And I think about so many other people, 4.5 million across the country that are dealing with this horrible illness. And I feel for each and every one of them.
Yeah, people need support when they're sick. That is for sure, especially when they're sick with this. As you wrote in a piece that's running on news4jax.com, your employer and our news partner, you said, "It's the sickest I've ever been in my adult life. Fever, body aches, fatigue, weakness, trouble breathing, cough, stomach issues, sleepless nights." So the sickest you've ever been? What would you say to people who have said, this is no worse than the flu?
I would say that I don't want the flu and you don't want COVID-19. We don't want either of this. And we have an opportunity to stop it from spreading. I was really sick. I was really miserable for several days. And still, to this day, Melissa, I don't know what my recovery is going to be like. Last night, I spoke with a friend. She's 25 years old, very athletic, very healthy, worked out every day. 2 months after, quote unquote, recovering from the coronavirus, she still can't do that. She still can't go back to the gym. She can't do any of the exercise she was doing. She said that it was cumbersome just to walk to the end of her driveway. That's sad to see someone that was so healthy still continue to deal with something like that, even after they think that they've gotten better. It's just something that people are so easy to write off nowadays. There's so many people that say, you know, toughen up, get through it. It's like a cold. You have a mild case. What is a mild case? Because a mild case is not even fun. I couldn't imagine a moderate or a severe case. And I have been in contact with so many amazing people through this time, including a lot of people that have opened up to me about their COVID-19 experience. And, you know, just yesterday I was talking to somebody that was in the hospital with breathing problems. And here I am trying to comfort him when I don't know what his future is. And I've spoken to other people who've lost their loved ones, their parents, their siblings, their best friends. And, I mean, my heart is just in so much pain for them, because not only is it a horrible death, it's a lonely death where you don't have someone by your side. It's been hard for me to come to grips, Melissa, with being alone for a week and a half, because that's not something that I'm used to. I'm a out and about guy.
Yeah, you're social, everybody knows
and I
you.
Enjoy
that's right. You've seen him on TV every night. Vic Mick, Channel 4's Vic Micolucci. As we speak with him, we'll go to your calls in a moment at 549-2937. Your chance to connect with Vic as he shares his battle with COVID-19. Okay, so yeah, so you're known around town. You're a busy guy. And you've been having to quarantine and recover from this disease. Do you know how you got COVID? Because you had been following all of the recommendations, masking, social distancing. At Channel 4, there's only a few people working in the building, as I understand it. You still, though, have to go out into the community and cover stories. Do you know where you got COVID?
I do, Melissa. Actually, I believe I was exposed twice. So I was definitely exposed to a positive case about 3 days before I got sick. And I found out that she tested positive the day that I got sick. I found that out, and I had been very careful, obviously, but I still removed myself from everything. This was before I felt really ill. But I just took myself out of everything. I immediately called my work partner, my photographer. I told him, hey, stay home. I'm going to head home. We're going to figure this out. I called my HR administrator, told her. We immediately went through the process. My friend also stayed at home. My goal was to make sure that this virus at least did not spread through me. I did not want to be a mechanism for making this situation even worse. And I immediately told the few people that I had been in close contact with. They monitored their symptoms. They self-isolated. They eventually got tested, and thankfully all of them are okay. And it goes back to us being safe. You know, at Channel 4, we put these protocols in place really before the virus was even bad here in Northeast Florida. And we stick by them, and we watch out for each other. And I certainly did not want to see anyone else in my work family get ill or even be at risk. So we did what we could. Thankfully, everyone else is healthy. There's no evidence of the virus spreading through me to anyone else. And that's the least that I could have done. But it goes back to wearing that mask, keeping the distance. Even when I was having conversations with people at work or because of work, I kept at least 6 feet away from them. I opted to do interviews outside in the open air. I wore a mask anytime I was around people. Washed my hands, wiped down surfaces. I mean, I followed all of these protocols.
All of the protocols.
Yeah, and did what I could.
This is the important message then that you're sharing, which is that we can be as careful as possible. And by the way, here at WJCT, we are following all those protocols too. Everybody is masked up here, and there are only a few people in the building at any time. You can still get the virus. It is so contagious. And you are a young, healthy guy with no underlying conditions that I know of. That's the message you have for people, isn't it? That anyone is vulnerable, whether or not you're sick already,
sure,
older, younger. The virus does not discriminate.
Absolutely. I'm 32 years old, born and raised in Jacksonville. I try to be very healthy. My family's all in the medical field, so I certainly had good advice. Now, I'm not going to say that I was perfect because, you know, I did go out to work in the world and do a couple things, and I had recently been on a hiking trip, and I wore a mask anytime I was in public.
Do you think you might have gotten it while you were traveling? Do you think that's where you got it, because you traveled?
It's possible that I got it from some people that I came in contact with on the trip, but I don't know exactly the source there. The only time that I can tell you I was 100% in contact with a positive case was after I got back from hiking. And I can tell you, I was careful too. And so was the friend of mine who got sick. But, you know, unless you sit in your home 100% by yourself, there is risk.
Yeah. And you mentioned that nobody in your workplace has gotten it from you. But what's your experience been with contact tracing from the state of Florida, the Department of Health? Have they followed up with you? Nothing.
I've had nothing. I did not get a call when my contact tested positive, the person that I may have gotten this virus from. I still have not gotten a call. You know, a week and a half since she tested positive, nobody has called me. This really, Melissa, is something that's on our own. We're fending for ourselves to some degree, in my opinion, at least through my experience and through her experience. And it's our own prerogative to be responsible, to keep, you know, memories of who we've been in contact with, who we've possibly exposed. I made those phone calls myself, not text messages, phone calls, you know, and I did what I could to be responsible and to let everyone know, just even if I very briefly came in contact with them, that, hey, this is the situation that I'm in.
Yeah.
But no, I haven't heard from anyone in the government about it. Basically, I had a private testing lab that gave me my positive results. I got a text message from them. They gave me some resources if I needed to call a doctor or consult. Have not heard from the health department, have not heard from anyone in that regard.
I think that gives us an indication, which we already were aware of, that the Florida Department of Health is simply unable to do an effective contact tracing program to get its arms around the spread of COVID in this state. This is not news. It is so unfortunate, though, to hear this from you. One more testimony about this. Meanwhile, let's go to some calls now for Vic Mick, as his fans call him, Channel 4's Vic Micolucci, on the mend from COVID-19. You can read his story at his employer's website, newsforjax.com. We'll have this up on our website later today as well, but right now it's 549-2937 to join the show. AJ is in Arlington. Hi, AJ. Good morning.
Hey, Melissa. Hey, Vic. My question to you is, you've been pretty responsible with wearing your mask for what you're telling us, and you still caught it. So what's the answer? If you're wearing your mask and being responsible and you still catch it, what's the answer?
Yeah. And you know, AJ, wearing the mask, let's be clear, that doesn't protect us. That protects others. You wear the mask
right
to protect others around you. But you know, I want to have Vic answer that question because, Vic, you're living proof that you can be extremely careful and still get this disease.
Sure, AJ. And I wish that I had an answer. I don't think anyone has an answer. I've spoken to so many, you know, very experienced and respected medical experts here in our community and across the U.S., and no one knows for sure exactly how this thing spreads or how it takes over our bodies. You know, I was careful anytime I was in a crowd, and you know, sometimes I even took heat for wearing a mask from viewers, from people that follow on social media saying, why are you doing this? It doesn't protect you. I do believe that if everyone wears a mask in public, it does protect us to some degree, but it's not going to make us bulletproof. And it just comes from one person. You know, I think that, you know, I'll say that if I'm with a close friend or a family member, we're not necessarily wearing a mask in the privacy and what we think is the safety of our own home. And that exposes us. And it's not that person has been irresponsible that gave it to you. It could be somebody they came in contact with. I mean, there's all a chain here. But AJ, you know, the important thing is responsibility. There are people that are waiting for their test results or waiting to be able to get in for a test that are still going about their daily lives and trying to finish their work or go to the grocery store or stockpile before they potentially get sick. There are people that have been sick that start to feel better that go back out into public again. I've covered this personally where this has happened, and we can't do that. I'm a social guy. I want to be out and about. I want to see my friends and my family members and interact with people. I know that I can't do that because, in essence, I'm potentially a danger to society at this moment. So I have to wait, and I'm going to wait longer than I typically would after an illness to make sure that I'm not contagious, that I'm not spreading it, that the buck stops here with the virus, for me at least. And that's what it's all about. And again, going back to what I was speaking to Melissa about, I did not get any calls from anyone in the government. This has all been upon myself to protect others. It's all been on me not wanting to see someone else fall victim to this horrible virus.
549-2937. Janice on the South Side. Hi, Janice. Good morning. You're on the air.
Thank you. I just want to say, well, first of all, we don't know what that man's particular idea of being safe is. You know, does he clean his groceries before he puts them away? Is he washing his hands, et cetera, et cetera? Anyway, besides that, we don't know anything about this disease, really. We know very, very little about it, which is all the more reason for everybody to be vigilant. We do know it kills people. That much we do know for sure. So, you know, and yesterday I was in the store and there were 30 people without masks on rushing by me, pushing up against me. I would say something. I said something to the store owners. I called after I got in my car. They didn't. They said there's nothing we can do. We're helpless.
Well, Janice, I've asked the same question when I've gone into grocery stores, and I want to thank you for your call, and I hear your frustration. You know, Vic, I've asked the same question when I've gone into a grocery store, and what the managers will say is we cannot force people to wear a mask inside our store, even though there's a citywide mask order. When you talk to workers anonymously at major grocery chains, what they will tell us, and we've interviewed a couple of them, is that store managers are afraid of being the star in a viral video when they try to force a customer to mask up. And they're even afraid of being shot at because there's so much anti-mask anger and resistance out there. But as you just said, if everyone masks up, it will go a long way toward us getting through this pandemic more quickly, right?
Absolutely. I don't think that anyone thinks that we're going to be able to just completely eliminate this virus within 2 weeks. But if we all do our part, and yes, you're 100% right. That's what I was thinking. Everybody is scared that they're going to be the center of some sort of viral video or, God forbid, a violent incident happens because of this. And there are people that are very aggressive with their stance, that are anti-mask, that are anti-virus, that are anti-treatment. And I've even gotten some backlash on that. I mean, look, I stopped reading the comments on the own article that we posted. And I'm obviously responding as quickly as I can to everybody that reaches out to me individually. But even this morning, I got a nasty message from somebody. And, you know, you can't really victimize the victims here. Now, look, I'm recovering. I'm so thankful and fortunate here, but I have so many people that are in the hospital, or I've heard from people who have lost loved ones. I have a rather good situation with this virus, thankfully, for the time being. There are so many people that don't, and I've also heard from so many people that are maybe in their 70s or 80s, Melissa, and they are scared to death to go out into public because of those that aren't wearing a mask, that aren't keeping their distance. You know what? If you don't believe in the virus, that's totally fine. But don't intimidate someone that does. And that's what I wrote about in this article on news4jax.com was you have your own right to your own opinion. Just like anything else in the world, it's a free country. But you also should respect others. And you don't know if that person at the grocery store has some pre-existing condition that would make it very hard for them to recover.
That's right.
And we're seeing that. And I've been out. You know, I wear my mask in public, and I have probably 10 in my car just in case. And I keep one in my pocket. I keep one in my backpack just in case.
I know.
But then there's people
that
just
my car is full
don't.
Of masks now. I know. It's so true for me and our kids. Let me, before we go back to some more calls for you, Vic, we're getting questions for you both on Twitter and Facebook. People want to know, and I'll read just one tweet. Vic, what kind of treatment options were offered to you? Were you prescribed anything? And if so, what kind? What type of self-care tactics are you using in isolation is another tweet. So people want to know, how were you treated for COVID-19?
So I will say that I'm very fortunate to be in a medical family. For whatever reason, I'm the black sheep that went into journalism.
You wanted to make a lot of money.
Yeah, right.
Which you might exactly. still, which you might that. Still. So, yeah, I'm just joking. Go ahead, Vic.
Oh, I know. So, you know, I have family members that are working with the virus daily, and, you know, they're following all of the studies and things like that. I talked to all of them via FaceTime and via phone, obviously not in person. And those, the big, you know, medical treatments were spoken about as a potential treatment for me. I chose not to go down that path because at the moment I felt like I was feeling horrible and doing terribly, but I knew that I was going to be okay in my own opinion there. So I really stuck with acetaminophen, Tylenol, a whole lot of water, some vitamins. I ate fresh fruits and veggies, which thankfully friends dropped off, soup, things like that. And I rested and I made sure that I did wake up and move around. That was the one thing that people told me.
So no,
don't
so
sit
no.
in bed.
And did you
entirely.
Lie on, they always say lie on your stomach, not your back. That's better for the lungs if you're sick. Did you do that?
I did. I moved around wherever I was comfortable. And there were times with the body aches and the fever that I wasn't comfortable at all.
But let me just be clear, you didn't take any prescription meds for this. Is that right?
I did not.
Okay.
I did not. I could have. I was in contact with a lot of doctors where I could have gotten a prescription for it, but I didn't want to add more things into my body and potentially have these side effects when I was fighting this by myself. Now, I did have a pulse oximeter, which my parents graciously dropped off. So I was able to monitor my pulse and my oxygen levels. So if things took a turn for the worse, we could reevaluate.
But you never got low enough on oxygen that you needed to be hospitalized, right?
Thank goodness, no. There was one scary night where I definitely thought about it. What's the nearest emergency room? What would I do? I texted a friend that's a nurse there, where I just kind of went through that plan in my head. But thankfully, you know, I was able to stabilize and I was okay. But, you know, you think about that. And you also think about if I were to go somewhere, if I were to go to a pharmacy or to an emergency room, would I be putting more people at risk? Would I be taking the resources? You hear about people that have to wait a long time to get a bed, to be able to get somewhere to get treated. Would I be using the resources that somebody else needs more importantly than me?
Sure. Let's take a few more calls for Vic Michelucci. Tim has been holding in Orange Park. Hi, Tim. Good morning.
Good morning, and thank you for taking my call. I hope that your health returns as soon as possible, sir. My question is kind of, I don't know if it's off base, but didn't the United States, didn't we write the book on how to deal with pandemics? And thank you very much. I'll take my answer off the air.
You know, I'm glad you brought that up, Tim. Yes, the previous administration put together a huge briefing book on global pandemic response. In fact, they said it was one of their top worries of something that they knew was going to almost certainly happen. And according to multiple published reports, the Trump administration basically threw out that playbook, which gave them a step-by-step guide as to how to respond to the situation we are now in. This is a matter of public record, and there has been no coherent national strategy toward response to COVID-19, which has left it up to the states, and that is why we've seen a patchwork of responses across the country, very uneven response to this virus, and that is exacerbating the crisis. So that's part of this story. But bringing it back to Vic, what's the final message that you have for everybody out there who's following your journey through this?
My message is just because you don't hear about someone that you know that has the virus does not mean that it's not there, that it's not still a big problem. I think a lot of people have become fatigued to it, Melissa. They've gotten numb to hearing it, and they feel like, well, look, those that are getting sick are getting sick. There's this great recovery rate. You don't hear that many stories, and it's really odd. You know, I did a national show hit this morning where the hosts are based in New York City, and I thought to myself, there's 4.5 million Americans with this disease. Why are they calling little me in Jacksonville, Florida? There's really not a lot of people that have publicly spoken about their battle and been transparent about it. And, you know, look, I know 15 people that have had the virus within the past month or have it right now, and they're being hush-hush because they're worried about business impacts. They're worried about their employment, something like that. And that's totally fine. That's their prerogative. Me covering this, being on the front lines of it, I felt that it was in the best interest to talk about it. And I have had some people that said, I didn't believe in the virus until I read your story and I saw you on air talking about it because, you know, I've watched you for years and I know that this is real and legitimate. And my heart goes out to the people that don't have the platform that I do to be able to spread their message. There's so many people that feel like they can't talk about it or no one will listen or they'll be penalized or reprimanded somehow for getting this virus. I mean, there are people that are being victimized for having the virus. And the thing is, it's okay. And there are a lot of people that are suffering. I have friends that are in the hospital right now with the coronavirus. And I also have contacts that have lost loved ones, their parents, their siblings, their friends, due to the virus right here in Northeast Florida. It's certainly a real thing in our community.
It is absolutely real. And I'm so glad we could have you on the show to shine your light on this and share your story because it will make a difference. And I'm so glad to hear, too, that you're doing better. More about Vic's story on his employer's website, our news partner, Channel 4 News for Jax.com, and online with us at WJCT.org later today. Vic Michelucci, good to have you, and we'll see you on the airwaves again soon. Thanks so much for joining us.
I appreciate you and the team. Keep up the good work.
Well, still ahead, how Florida's Flamingo Magazine is pivoting to digital in this interesting time we're in. But up next.
We feel a little abandoned, kind of talk to other teachers, and they're all saying, well, where's the community? Where is our support group?
A Jacksonville teacher shares his fear and trepidation about going back to the classroom in this time of COVID. We'll be right back. Welcome back. Back to school planning has been stressful for parents and kids, but especially teachers. How will they handle hybrid learning? And especially, how will they handle the risk of getting sick? The Florida Teachers Union has sued over a statewide edict sending educators back to brick and mortar classrooms next month. So how are local teachers dealing with all this? Well, Bill Hudson teaches design and engineering at Mayport Coastal Sciences Middle School. He's 65 at high risk for contracting coronavirus. I spoke with Bill about how he and his fellow colleagues are feeling right now about the mandate to go back into the classroom. Bill, good to talk to you. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you, Melissa. Nice to be with you.
As a teacher, I really am curious to ask you, first off, what is the most common emotion you're feeling right now as you contemplate the upcoming school year?
And I don't just speak for me, but I guess we feel a little abandoned, honestly. You know, I kind of talk to other teachers, and they're all saying, well, where's the community? I mean, where is our support group? Of course we love the children. Of course we all want to go back to school, but I just don't hear a lot of talk about what the impact is going to have on teachers. Kids, it looks like, won't suffer from this disease, but teachers certainly will. And the older they are, the more vulnerable they are. So, and I'm hearing too, you know, we're going to be the ones on the front lines of this. We know more about how to manage a classroom than anyone, but we don't feel like anyone asked us our opinion or, but how do you feel about going back? What ideas do you have? How is the plan going to work in your classroom? We kind of feel abandoned.
What do you think of the current back-to-school plan that's been proposed for Duval County?
Well, you know, I went to the board meetings, and I've been communicating with school board members a lot, and I have no question that everything's done in good faith, and an awful lot of work's been done and put into the plan. I think everybody's being influenced by external forces, trying to do their best, but that would be a good plan, an excellent plan, if the numbers in Jacksonville were much lower than they are. The problem is, even the new CDC guidelines, if you look at them, say if you're in a community with uncontrolled spread and high numbers, the mitigation plan is not to go back to school with safety precautions. The mitigation plan is to shelter in place and not open schools. So that's my basic disconnect with all of it. I really don't think it's about the back-to-school camp and the stay-at-home camp. You know, everything is in camps these days. I think everybody's in the go-back-to-school camp. The question is, when you go back to school. You go back to school when it's safe, and it's not safe.
Do you think that the school board, the superintendent, should have defied the commissioner of education for decreeing that schools must be open 5 days a week next month?
Boy, I don't know. You're way out of my pay grade there. Mm-hmm. And as I say, no one should envy Dr. Green for the job she has to do. But, you know, we're playing a game of who's got the ball. The commissioner's order said that schools could only close by order of the health department. And a number of us just got a response from the health department that says that's not their role. They're not a regulative body. And it's not their job to decide whether schools are opened or closed. And Dr. Green is deferring to the Department of Education. The Department of Education is deferring to the health department. And, you know, the ball's in the air, and it's about to hit the turf with nobody catching it. I don't know. I would hope that someone at a level higher than Dr. Green would protect her and step up and demonstrate some leadership. I completely understand her motivations. I disagree with the logic behind the plan, and I'm very concerned about it, but I respect that she had a very hard choice.
As for you, will you go back into the classroom?
I'm in a really bad spot there. We're still sort of negotiating and talking to people. As I think I've mentioned to you before, I'm 65 and have some underlying health conditions. I feel fine. I have plenty of energy. But I'm in that high-risk category. And where we thought that there were going to be provisions made for the more vulnerable teachers, those that for one reason or another are at high risk, what we're being told right now is that because of provisions of federal law, the district can't put people into one position or another based on medical conditions. So I think where the intention might have been, well, we'll pair the vulnerable teachers up with the children and families that choose to go virtual, it doesn't look like even that can be guaranteed now. So this is all still in the works. There's a few weeks left. You know, my principal, Mr. Cook, is one of the best administrators I've ever seen, and he's doing everything he can for us. But none of us know. It's a very uncertain future, and we're all very worried.
There have been a number of groups of educators that have sprung up, essentially making demands of their local leadership and also the statewide education leadership, calling for the kind of common sense response to this pandemic that teachers say we're not seeing. Do you think those teacher voices are having any impact?
Well, here's the problem with that. Of course, I've shown up for most of the rallies and spoken at the school board, and I feel like I've done my part. But, you know, a lot of times I'm looking behind me and seeing that there aren't an awful lot of teachers standing there, 50 or 60 out of, what, 5 or 6,000 in the district. And this is because of who teachers are as a group. They're accommodating people. They have a tendency to take on whatever burden is put on them because they believe in what they're doing. I don't know if we have the numbers to have an impact. I suppose the best bet is the statewide teachers union lawsuit. And, you know, there may well be communities in Florida where numbers are low enough to open or open with a hybrid model, but somebody needs to come up with something that's based more on a clear-eyed view of the data, I suppose. I'm a science teacher. I'm trying to teach kids all the time. Rational, evidence-based decision-making. That's what we need here, and that's what we're not getting. I don't know if I answered your question or not.
Well, Bill, I want to thank you, and I want you to, if you could, keep us posted as you head back to school.
Will do. And listen, I want to tell you how much I really, really appreciate your thorough and regular coverage of this. It's been a big morale boost to many of us. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much. Well, live music and art is something virtually everyone can agree is a good thing, even Congress. Yeah, they've introduced a new relief bill for music and entertainment venues struggling in this pandemic. Venues like the Florida Theater, closed right now, but the Save Our Stages Act would give this vital cultural institution and so many others the support they need. Numa Saisalan is CEO of the Florida Theater, and he's on the line with more about Save Our Stages. Hi, Numa.
Good morning, Melissa. It's great to be here again.
Great to have you on the show. And so the Florida Theater, like every other venue, has been closed since March. You're doing okay because you're a sound institution. Still, so many venues are at risk of closing, and the Save Our Stages Act would really be a lifeline to them. How will this legislation help venues like the Florida Theater?
So we, like thousands of other venues around the country, are closed right now because we've learned that it's not great for to prevent virus transmission by packing people into small, enclosed, intimate spaces. So, you know, every concert venue in the country is closed, thousands of venues. We have no revenue. There's an industry estimate out there that $9 billion in ticket sales will be lost if we're not open by 2021, which is seeming increasingly likely. And, you know, that's a lot of culture not happening, and that's a lot of jobs not happening right now. And, you know, I think that those are the two important pieces of this legislation, recognizing that our culture and, you know, each of our unique individual cities is important. You know, imagine Jacksonville without the Florida Theater, or Atlanta without the Fox Theater, or Nashville without the Bluebird Cafe or the Ryman Auditorium. And also recognizing that there are jobs attached to these venues. You know, those are people who are out of work. Those are people who can't afford to take care of themselves or spend money in the economy. So in this latest round of federal relief legislation discussions, there's a bipartisan effort led by John Cornyn, who's a Republican of Texas in the Senate, and Amy Klobuchar, who I think most people know is a Democrat from Minnesota. And they've introduced something called the Save Our Stages Act, which would provide relief to the live music industry.
Right. And this would establish a $10 billion grant program for independent live venues like the Florida Theater. If this passes, you'll see some immediate support. That would be so welcome, not just for the Florida Theater, which is such a gem, but all the independent venues around this community.
Yes. We're lucky, you know, we're somewhat of a stable institution. We actually, in good times, spend time talking about being prepared for the unexpected, even though none of us expected this. But there are, you know, venues and organizations all across the country who were not prepared for something like this. But nonetheless, they're important, and there's a lot of jobs connected to them. So, you know, this is something we really should want to do as a country because it's saving an industry. And it would provide grants, not loans, to each organization. So when it's over, the recipients wouldn't be burdened by debt. And there are, you know, caps on the amount of funding that can be received. And they're to be used, like all the other relief packages, they're to be used for very specific purposes like mortgage and rent, utilities and maintenance. And if anybody's interested, there's a website, of course, SaveOurStages.com, and it's got a terrific form. It takes about a minute to fill out. You plug in your name and your address, and it shows you who your federal senators are. We should all know that, of course. Mm-hmm. Shows you who your local elected House representative is, and you can click submit to send them a letter of support. And it's so important for people in Florida to do this because Marco Rubio, one of our senators, holds a key committee seat that will make these decisions. So I would urge everybody in Jacksonville and listening to you on the internet far and wide to go to SaveOurStages.com and show your support for live entertainment.
Right. Just go to SaveOurStages.com and take literally a minute to add your name to this cause. And you can follow the hashtag on social media, SaveOurStages. If you've ever gone to a concert or any kind of event at the Florida Theater, hey, get on the website and do this. Because as Numa is saying, just imagine this community without a cultural shining light like the Florida Theater. Or any of the places you like to go and listen to live music or see art. The art and culture in this community is vital to what makes this community special. The Florida Theater alone had $13 million in economic impact last year in Northeast Florida. The Save Our Stages Act, if it passes Congress, will really make a difference in the cultural vibrance of this community, because until this virus passes us by, venues like the Florida Theater have to remain closed due to public health requirements. $9 billion in ticket sales lost, Numa says, if they don't open until 2021. This is via the National Independent Venue Association. And so, you know, Numa, I really look forward to the time when you open your doors again and we can all enjoy the excitement and magic of the Florida Theater. And hopefully we'll be before the end of this year.
Nobody looks forward to that night more than I do.
I'm sure that's true. Well, again, the website is SaveOurStages.com. Go to SaveOurStages.com and just take a second to let your senators know. Our Florida senators are of course, Marco Rubio and Rick Scott. Let them know you expect them to support the Save Our Stages Act. And follow the hashtag and tweet and Facebook it and Instagram it. Save Our Stages is the hashtag to learn more about this. Numa Sasolin, keeping the rudder steady at the Florida Theater. I want to thank you.
Thanks,
it's good
Melissa.
It's good to hear your voice, and I hope to see you in person the next time.
Me too. Thanks for having us.
Thank you so much. A quick break, and in a moment, the pandemic is affecting small business of all kinds. That includes magazines. The award-winning Flamingo magazine is converting to a digital format. That's after this.
Sporer Dodd, a Florida-based law firm with a reputation for skilled, aggressive advocacy against corporations, individuals, and government agencies. Sporer Dodd has recovered over $1 billion on behalf of clients. Learn more today at sdlitigation.com. The Florida Times Union, a trusted name in local news, weather, and sports for over 150 years, continue to support local journalism. Jacksonville.com for more information on digital and print subscriptions.
School nurses are often the first people that students go to when they feel sick. That's an even bigger responsibility in the middle of a pandemic.
I do feel the weight of the world and the weight of my community as we return to school.
I'm Elsa Chang, trying to prevent COVID-19 from spreading in the classroom. This afternoon on All Things Considered from NPR News.
Starting at 4 here on WJCT News 89.9.
On the next Fresh Air, the legacy of white supremacy in American Christianity. We talk with Robert P. Jones, author of the new book, White Too Long. His main focus is on the Southern Baptist Church, the denomination in which he grew up, which justified slavery and supported the Confederacy. Jones founded the Public Religion Research Institute. Join us.
Today at noon, here on WJCT News 89.9.
COVID-19 has created a perfect storm for millions who struggle with weight. Stress has led some to eat more, others much less, and being stuck inside with nowhere to go is exacerbating mental health issues for millions of Americans. I'm Jen White, staying in shape while stuck inside. Next time on 1A.
Today, starting at 10, here on WJCT News 89.9.
Welcome back. Well, the pandemic has been tough for small business of all kinds. So business owners are getting creative to find new ways to get their product out. That includes the publishing business. The award-winning Flamingo Magazine covers Florida lifestyles. Recently, they made the shift from a print product to a digital one. I learned more from publisher Jamie Rich. Jamie, good to talk to you. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you for having me, Melissa.
So Flamingo Magazine has made a big change in its business model, in part in response to the pandemic. You have gone fully digital, correct?
That is correct. We just made the switch, you know, really as a result of coronavirus. But it's been surprisingly exciting and fun, and we've really embraced it after we sort of mourned the loss, I guess I should say, of our summer print edition, but it was really out of necessity. It's become kind of a silver lining of doubling down on the digital edition of what we do and all of the digital versions of the content that we produce, including video now, which is something that our readers have wanted for a long time, but now we're able to offer, and just a new way of storytelling for us.
This is exciting for you because, of course, Flamingo covers the entire state of Florida. You have recently won multiple awards from the Florida Magazine Association, including Magazine of the Year. So this is a publication that really provides a lot of value. It's been so tough for print media of all kinds, even before this pandemic got underway. So the digital, sure. The digital model makes sense for you and many others. But so when people go to your website now, they will have a different experience than what they would have had, you know, if they picked up a paper magazine. This is just a different way to get the content, yeah?
Absolutely. I mean, we're still telling the same high-quality stories that we've always told, the Florida-rooted stories that really represent that authentic sunshine state of mind, if you will. And we're still doing that in the same way that we've always done it. But yes, it is a different experience than flipping through paper pages of the magazine, but the reality is, you know, distribution of a traditional print magazine has been totally upended by coronavirus. Of course, you can still mail out to subscribers, but being on a newsstand isn't really a viable method of getting those stories out there and telling those stories these days. So we have turned to the website. It is a different experience in that there's video content now. There's more frequent content now. Before, we really just focused on producing that print edition. And then, of course, all the stories were then published onto our website, pushed out through our social media channels, and all that great stuff. But now we're doing even more content than we were before because everything was really driven by what we had in our pages. But now, you know, almost daily, we're putting out new stories, new feature stories, new chef profiles, new book reviews. It's really more for the reader than ever. So that's been a real benefit and a real eye-opener for us. And we feel like our audience is even bigger than it was before as a result of this.
And with that in mind, you have launched a membership drive, not unlike the pledge drives we do here in public media. It is the
true
Flamingo Friend campaign. Tell us about that.
That's right. Well, because of, you know, coronavirus, there's been some truths that have been revealed, and one of those is, you know, advertisers. The way we make money has had to be rethought, and of course, we were more set up in a traditional media sense that advertising paid for the bulk of, you know, printing and distributing the magazine, and of course, subscribers pay for the content as well. But the shift has had to change to become more reader-based, reader-supported, because advertisers and businesses that were, you know, our partners before are hurting more than ever right now. So with advertising revenue drastically down and the distribution model disrupted, you know, we said, obviously, we're embracing the digital, but we need to turn to our readers and say, look, if you love Florida, if you love what we do, then we need your support now more than ever. So we launched the campaign just about a little less than a month ago, and we have about 20 days left. We're a third of the way to our goal, which is great, a little more than a third of the way to the goal, but we still have a lot more to raise. And really, it's just to continue doing what we do to kind of make it through this very strange time, continue telling Florida's greatest stories and putting our journalists to work, putting our photographers to work around the state, our illustrators to work, our editors, everybody who's part of this, and giving our readers what they have come to expect and love, and then just continuing to put Florida journalists to work. So yeah, that's what the campaign's all about. And we are looking for our readers and Floridians to support us, and hopefully we can continue doing what we love.
They can do that at your Indiegogo campaign. It's Flamingo's inaugural membership drive, supporting Florida's only statewide lifestyle media brand. The website is flamingomag.com. Jamie Rich, the intrepid publisher of Flamingo, with us. Thank you, Jamie, so much for this update, and keep us posted.
Thank you, Melissa. I will. Stay safe.
And that's our show. Thanks for listening, everyone, and thanks to all of our guests and callers. Our producer is Heather Schatz. Josh Torres is show director. Station news director is Jessica Palumbo, and Bill Bortsfield is our digital editor here at the station. Keep those emails coming, meanwhile, to firstcoastconnect@wjct.org. We value your feedback. And if you missed any part of today's show, you can always listen to the rebroadcast over the radio tonight at 8 o'clock, or our podcast is always online. I'm Melissa Ross. This is First Coast Connect on 89.9. Have a great Thursday. Keep those masks on.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.